Kareem Copeland, Washington Post. I'm sorry you don't get the fancy introduction, but your piece was awesome. I'm excited to talk to you about it.
I appreciate you having me.
All good, man. All good. All right, so you wrote a piece on WNBA officiating, which for those of us that have been watching the WNBA for a long time, is something that has needed more attention for a long time. It is now getting a lot of attention. How is the league reacting to the increased scrutiny of what has been inconsistent at best, or maybe at worst, as you wrote about officiating in its games?
It's actually kind of funny. They acknowledge that, hey, we're not perfect, and they talk a lot about, hey, we've got young refs coming in. They're coming through this pipeline that, hey, before they even hit a WNBA floor, there's 6 to 10 years in our pipeline and all these things. But it's funny you use the word consistency, and that seems to be the biggest divide between the two groups when you're talking about players and coaches and the league. The league thinks the consistency word is a bit of a cop-out, or at minimum, misunderstood. I was talking to Monty McCutcheon, who's kind of in head of officiating. He's development and training for all of the NBA leagues, which we're talking G League, we're talking WNBA, we're talking about NBA. And he was saying, listen, there's a difference between consistency and fair. And a lot of coaches get upset when so-and-so, you know, there's a free throw discrepancy. They've shot 20 free throws. We've only shot five. Things aren't consistent. He says that, listen, that's a fair issue, not a consistency issue. The consistency issue should be, hey, are we calling the same calls the exact way? Are we applying the rules the exact way at the same time? He believes that's more of what we're hearing with consistency, and they chuckle a little bit because they're like, listen, we've been hearing this complaint for years. At the same time, I talked to Nafis Collier the other day, and she says she thinks it's getting worse. And so there's this divide between the way the two groups kind of view what's going on right now. But the league acknowledges that it's a thing, that they want to get better. And, you know, the big thing that they kept saying is, you know, observed, educated, and held accountable. Those are the three things that all their refs have to kind of go through. And so my kind of question is, you know, the kind of held accountable part, because we haven't seen a whole lot of that, or it's not publicly announced when, you know, when someone, I don't want to say the word disciplined, but is held accountable from the official standpoint. But then you kind of go back to the big fracas the other day between the Fever and the Sun, and, you know, the next day they're upgrading technicals, and Angel Reese's hair gets pulled and it gets called just a regular common foul. And those are like the things that we as fans see and say, you know, that just can't right. That's not right and doesn't make sense. And so I think that's where this kind of discord is kind of happening. So there's a hope that they're on the right path and that they are going to stick to their guns and do what they say as far as holding folks accountable. But from our side of things, you know, we kind of just got to watch because those things aren't exactly publicized. And so you just kind of go game by game and kind of cross your fingers each game and see how things are going to be officiated.
When it comes to the quality standpoint, Kareem, I get to use one of my favorite journalism quotes 2 days in a row on the show. I was using it with Eric Flack yesterday. You get it today. If one side says it's raining, or one person says it's raining and someone else says it's not, our job is ultimately to go outside and find out. When you look at the quality of WNBA officiating, as someone who has watched this league as a fan at first and now covered this league for a number of years now, do you think the quality is A, worrisome, and then B, to Nafisa Collier's point, do you think it's actually getting worse?
I'm not sure if it's getting worse, but I do think it's a thing. I do think it's a thing that when you watch, quite frankly, the NBA, that you feel like there's different, that there's not as many issues on that side. I would say even, you know, we're talking about the debut, but I would venture to go to the NCAA level also. It just feels like there's more, as much as they hate the word, inconsistency on the women's side than there is on the men's side. And I would also venture that probably can trace that back a little bit to the fact of the way the salary structures are set up. When you're in the NBA, you're fully salaried. You can only work for the NBA. That's it. That's your full-time job. On the women's side with the W, you get paid, let's say, for example, I was talking to an official, and this was the example he gave me. You can get paid $2,000 per game with expenses from the WNBA. But say you're refereeing an SEC game, you get paid $5,000 a game, but without your expenses. So if you're trying to make this your profession, you're going to naturally, and I would say the most talented people, would gravitate towards a more stable financial situation where, number one, you're fully salaried, and number two, this is all I've got to do. I don't have to do something else during. I don't have to have a side job. I don't necessarily have to do college games during the winter, all of these kind of things. I think I got off on a little bit of a different tangent. But point being, I do think there's a lot to clean up on the women's side, and I think the fact that it's gotten the game right now is just getting more attention than ever, that there's a lot more eyeballs out there witnessing it, so the conversation is getting a lot louder, and quite frankly, that does put a little bit more pressure on the league.
Kareem Copeland, reporter, Washington Post, with us here on The Hoffman Show. The reporting you did in talking to an actual official, to me, is what set this piece apart from, let's say, my griping about it over the years. Because I can also be like, hey, here's this press conference clip. And with my own eyes, I think it stinks. This reporting, I thought, was so interesting because it opens up a real question, Kareem, which is, can the WNBA afford, is a silly term here in a way, because it's both directly on the nose, monetarily, literally afford, but I also mean this in a less literal sense. Can they afford to have full-time officials in a league that just spans the summer, right? The WNBA tips off in, April is when training camps open. They tip off in May. Mm-hmm. They're done by October. Do they just expect referees not to take other jobs the rest of the year? And by the way, before anyone's like, well, they do it in the NBA, the NFL does not have full-time officials. So for leagues that have limited calendars, this is a problem across sports. So can the WNBA, within the both the financial and that kind of time constraint context, afford to have full-time officials? How would that work?
I think that's the big question. And even the official that I talked to was kind of pointing out to that same thing, said, hey, if you pay me right, you know, I'll give up all that other stuff and I can completely focus on this, because it also affects officials when you're going back and forth from the college game to the WNBA game. You have to kind of adjust a little bit because they're different games. There's different requirements. So you kind of have to adjust. And he was saying, listen, there's people who don't adjust very well. There's people who, are used to this college system, and then when it comes summertime and it's time to be in a pro mind frame, that they don't necessarily switch the same way. And so that's the big thing. When we talk about the financials, you said, can they afford it? That's the question, but we've got a big new $2.2 million media deal coming up. The CBA is being negotiated as we speak. And so that's kind of the next question, is how are they going to, where and how are they going to apply these new funds? And does some of that go into officiating or address officiating or make that a more lucrative and stable situation for your officials, so you might not be losing the best of the best to the NBA, or you might not be losing the best to the best to people who decide, hey, if I just do my college games and I can do more games on that level and I can make technically game to game more money, and depending on how they arrange their travel and their meals and their hotels, if you can arrange it where you can still make more money on those games, it makes the W less attractive. So that becomes the question that, quite frankly, isn't answered right now as they negotiate the new CBA. And, we're less than, they just announced the new media deal, 6 months ago, if that. So we're still trying to see how this new windfall of cash is going to be divvied out and how it's long-term going to affect the league. But every year, they're adding more games, they're adding more teams, And so there's more attention and more eyes, and there's going to be more games on TV. So as people watch more closely, you're going to have to, we were talking about being held accountable. They're going to be held accountable to have better officiating. And so that's the big question that we're all kind of waiting to see.
What's the current relationship between, on an officiating front, between the WNBA, the NBA, and the G League, and the resources that are available from a training perspective and even a potential to cross games and have officials get extra reps and be able to work within a similar system, NBA to G League to W? Is there crossover? What's the relationship?
Well, essentially, the whole system is set up where they identify people, you know, young officials at lower levels, whether it's camps or maybe levels of NCAA or whatever. And so we start bringing you in the pipeline. And at that point, they get training, they get developed, they go out and they're still out working. But like the next step is they call it grassroots, where you kind of get in this program where you're doing summer camps, like the Boo Williams camp that they have here close to D.C. in the DMV. They start putting them in those kind of camps and watching them, like, grow and learn and get used to things. And then a certain amount of them kind of get up to the next level, where I think it's called the NBA Players Association has a top 100 camp each year.
Yep, so then just happened. It's to part of the NBA draft process. It literally happened a month ago.
Absolutely. So you go there and you start to, you know, you continue to grow and show who you are, and they evaluate you, and then, you know, they trim the list down even more. And so then at that point, you finally get to the point where you can work some G League games. And G League, essentially, G League and Summer League is kind of your training ground for those that go on to the WNBA and the NBA. Now, remember, the NBA, once you get to the NBA, you can't work any other league. You are contracted to that. You've got a full salary. You can only work NBA games. Not the same way for the W, because you can also still work college and still work other things during the off season. So that's kind of where you – that's kind of the process. And, again, going back to McCutcheon, he insisted that the WNBA is not a feeder league to the NBA. And I was talking to Eric Thibault, the old Mystics coach, who's now associate coach for the Lynx, and that was the question that he had. He said the league has to decide at some point whether this is the destination for officials or is this another step along the road. And so obviously there's a disconnect between coaches, players, and what the league sees as that, because they certainly don't feel like the officials are coming to the W as a destination, and the league is saying, no, it is a destination. However, the flat-out financials makes it where it can't be your only destination, even if that is your destination.
Right. That just feels like insulting to our collective intelligence, with all due respect to the league office. Like, one's a salary job, one's not. Like, how, do you want the job with the guarantees and benefits, or do you want the freelance gig? Like, what are we even talking about here? And that's, like, in fairness to the league, on the other side of that, again, you're dealing with half the game. So, to me, it feels like there should almost be, like, a WG League level and then an NBA level. And also, in fairness to the reality of the games, right? NBA players, if you were to put stopwatches on them, et cetera, are faster. The game is faster. It is harder to officiate the NBA game than the W game. That said, the style of play in the W and the accepted amount of physicality, like legal physicality, that has been a hallmark of that league, makes it very, very difficult to officiate. So I don't, like, to me, that's a bunch of relevant information. I don't know what to do with it, but what I do know now, Kareem, is that it's clearly not working. Are there, like, have you found people that you're like, oh, that's a good idea? Or is this all, are all the negotiations really being kept in-house behind the scenes, if they're even happening at all?
It seems being kept in-house for the most part, but just kind of along my reporting, you know, there's just certain things that everybody's kind of pointing out that's like, hey, we need to figure out, you know, what physicality we're going to allow. You know, there was a point coming into the season that freedom of movement, I was talking to the current Mystic coach, Sidney Johnson. He said, hey, freedom of movement was supposed to be an emphasis this year, and people are getting grabbed and knocked down and slowed up. And, you know, if you go into the paint in a WNBA game, oh my goodness, you know, it is rough down there. And even going back to your comparison to NBA, they are two different styles of officiating, I would say, because of the two different styles of games and things you got to look out for and things like that. A big thing that people talked about is communication. Like, hey, some people do a very good job of communicating with a coach, with coaches and players, and that can head off a lot of this, a lot of the issues that arise. And some people just, quite frankly, aren't. And that would sounded like one of the things that kind of pop up more with people who go back and are really good at or officiate a lot of college games, because it seems like you give a little bit more leeway to college coaches. Because if a college coach gets on your bad side and then they report you to the league, then you can eventually get held out of, you know, premier games. And so that affects your paycheck. Whereas when you're on the pro game, listen, you should be able to – it's all kind of about keeping control of the game. And if you don't have good communication, things get out of whack real quick. Just that, you know, we keep coming back to that Fever Sun game. I think that's what it was. You know, you didn't have control of the game. And that's the thing that everybody kind of points out. The refs are supposed to have control of the game. And on the different levels, there seems to be a distance when that happens and how much physicality they're allowing, the calls that they're making between a common foul, a technical, a flagrant one. Because we saw in that, it's you know, all of a sudden they had to go back the next day and adjust this. Okay, we're going to make this a flagrant too. We're going to fine so-and-so. So when you have to kind of go back the next day and start adjusting things, that means things weren't called the right way on the floor in the first place. So I think all of this stuff is definitely being talked about behind the scenes. But, you know, they're going to try to keep that stuff as in-house as possible.
All right, last one real quick is just as a basketball person covering the league, like – we've mentioned the Suns Fever fracas a couple times. Do you think they eventually got that right? Because I was not thrilled with how the penalties ended with that one. What did you make, before I tell you what I think, what did you make of what ultimately came of that hullabaloo?
I mean, you eventually, I didn't have any issues with the way they finally kind of got it, but I mean, It's. I feel like it's easy to come or turn around the next day and change the things, but you had already let it get out of control on the floor in the first point. That's the way I looked at it, is that you had to get control of the game before you got to the point where I'm going, oh my gosh, I'm going blank, where Sophie is essentially, you know, putting somebody in a headlock. You know what I'm saying? Like that is the culmination of an entire game of things not being called or things being allowed to be more physical than it needs to be. That's kind of the way that I look at it. Now, you know, how Mabry doesn't get more than just a technical or whatever I think it was a technical that they originally called on her when she ran up on Caitlin and knocked her to the floor. And then the next day they upgraded it to a flagrant two, and then they're like, yeah, she should have been ejected. Well, you know, that kind of stuff needs to happen in the moment, not the next day. And so, of course, that's why people are all riled up and taking little shots at each other and digs at each other throughout the game. Because, you know, we know people are going to defend their teammates and defend their stars. And if you let somebody just run up and knock them to the floor with barely any consequence, all right, this is how it's going to go today. This is how we're going to play. All right. And all of a sudden, you're losing control of the game. So that's whatever they kind of end up, you know, the things and the adjustments and the fines the next day, that's not so much of my concern, because I want you to have control of the situation in the moment. And the official that I talked to, he was like, yeah, they completely blew that. That whole situation was horrible. Should have never got to that point because they blew the calls in the very first place.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there was stuff leading up to it. Unpopular opinion, especially amongst very certain loud parts of the internet that let me know about it. I thought they got it right on the floor. I thought that, like, Caitlin was distracted. I'm not going to say, like, she flopped. She was distracted by the fact that she got poked in the eye and Mabry, like, bumped her and she went down really easy. And, like, that's
a little bit more than a bump.
I thought she went down easy. I didn't think that had to be a flagrant two. I thought Cunningham should have been suspended because we don't tackle people in basketball. That was ridiculous. But that's just my personal opinion. If you wanted to throw Mabry out because, like, she clearly escalated, I'm fine with that. But the Cunningham thing, not getting suspended for tackling someone and then looking to immediately start a fight, that can't happen. All right. Kareem Copeland, Washington Post. He does real reporting, and you can read it in the Washington Post, washingtonpost.com/sports. Kareem, thanks for your time. As always, my friend, have a great weekend, and I'll see you at ESA or Care for Serena soon.
Absolutely, homie. Thank you. Appreciate you having me, though.
Absolutely. Kareem Copeland with us here on The Hoffman Show.